Welcome to the Your Theories About Loss Mega Theory Contest Edition. This episode contains the final three contest entries. Voting has now begun at the YourTheories.com website. To vote on your favorite mega theory, go to YourTheories.com and click on the Mega Theory Contest link. That will take you directly to the voting poll. Each option in the poll will contain a link to the podcast in which that theory was featured. The winner will be announced on the October 3rd podcast. Next week's Mega Theory podcast will feature all the contest entries. Thank you, and happy voting. The Father and Relationships Theory by Anjelius. This theory centers around a small bit of information leaked by the producers in a podcast. They said that the fathers of the Lossies do have a connection, but we won't go into that this season. This led me to thinking. Many of the Lossies' fathers are rich and powerful, such as Jack, Locke, Son, Anna Lucia's mother, and both Boone and Shannon. Perhaps they had something to do with the island. From what little I know of the Loss experience, I know that there are very shady happenings at the Hansel Foundation. Perhaps the fathers had some sort of connection with the Hansel Foundation. This logically explains the Lossies' lives being interconnected. So what exactly is the purpose for the Lossies being on the island? I think that it is, as Locke believes, or believed for that matter, a test. But not everyone has a powerful parent. Can it be that everyone else is just unlucky? And why take Kate and Sawyer along with Jack? There is something that all the Losties have in common. What it is, I think, will be the foundation for Season 4. So what exactly is the Hansel Foundation planning? And why are these people on the island chosen? And who are these others? I know Season 3 will answer some of these questions. The only way I could possibly figure it out would be pure guessing. But in regards to the monster, the producers said that we saw it but did not know. We know that we will find out at the end of Season 3. I think that Season 3 will be able to answer the relationship question, but not so much mythology. So I hope that as this season progresses, more and more information can be added to this theory so that it can actually become an answer.
Welcome to the special edition of the Your Theories About Loss podcast, Mega Theory Contest Edition. I'm Eamon, my screen name on the message boards is Wazoo, and I am reading to you today The Bigfoot Theory and the Books Tell All by Brian Elnick. He writes, I had a brainstorm today after listening to DJ Dan. Something just clicked in my head. You know how we all thought that Locke encountered the black smoke during the early episodes on the first season? I think most of us were wrong. I believe the black smoke security system has now been answered, and I have posted that theory in the black smoke category. I am now under the impression that the Bigfoot statue we see on the other side of the mountain is by someone or something, perhaps somewhere between man and beast, and I have to give props to It's Mrs. B for pushing my brain over to this train of thought. I don't think Dharma created it, but encountered it. I talked about how possibly a very old culture lived there and built that statue. I still believe that, but now I think of this more along the lines of King Kong. This thing that what I'm going to call Bigfoot from here on out, I think controls a major portion of this island. I don't think he's a complete beast, but I even think this could be the him that Henry Gale speaks of. However he came into being, because I don't claim to have all the answers about him, and all my thoughts of him are theory, I strongly believe he has to do with the others in the black smoke. I see the black smoke like his pet. I believe he is very intelligent. I also think that he may not be from Earth. I say this because I think books have to play in this. In all great mysteries and thrillers, there are tells. While many scoff at the ideas, they are usually the ones to later say, "Why didn't I put this together?" I will say this before I really start here. I believe there are absolutely no errors made with the clues in the show. None. Every piece to the puzzle has a purpose. So now, here are the books, excluding Bad Twin, because that book has direct ties with the show, and I'll post a separate theory about that. Here are the books with some bios and summaries, which I have found through various sources online. First book, A Wrinkle in Time. Everyone in town thinks Meg Murray is vaudeville and dull-witted, and that her younger brother Charles Wallace is dumb. People are also saying that her physicist father has run off and left their brilliant scientist mother. Spurred on these rumors by an unearthly stranger, the Tesseract-touting Mrs. Watsit, I don't know what a Tesseract is, Meg and Charles Wallace and their new friend Calvin O'Keefe embark on a perilous quest through space to find their father. In doing so, they must travel behind the shadow of an evil power that is darkening the cosmos one planet at a time. This is no superhero tale, nor is it science fiction, although it shares elements of both. The travelers must rely on their individual and collective strengths, delving deep within themselves to find answers. Follows us a message from the author. Madeline Leangle reflects the 35th anniversary of A Wrinkle in Time. It is an indication that stories have a life of their own, and that they say different things to different people at different times. In the Time novels, Meg and Polly ask some big questions. Many of us ask these questions as we're growing up, but we tend to let them go because there's so much else to do. I write the books I do because I'm still asking the questions. It is so exciting that it makes me want to write. To write about what goes on in the great macrocosm outside us, and the equal great microcosm in the very small. So I send Meg to the other galaxies, and the microcosm, and mitochondria, and Farandole, I think. And I send Meg and Charles Wallace and Polly into time, and past, and the future. In each book, the characters are living into the questions that we all have to live into. Some of these questions don't have finite answers, but the questions themselves are important. Don't stop asking, and don't let anybody tell you the questions aren't worth it. They are. And it's good to share them with people like Meg and Calvin and Charles Wallace and even Zach. If anyone invited you to discover a newly discovered galaxy, would you go? I would. It's a wonderful way to meet new and exciting people. Stories always tell us more than mere words, and that is why we love to write it and to read it. Second book, Watership Down. Living in the Saddleford Warren, with its chief rabbit and Oswa maintaining a comfortable social order, Hazel and his little brother Fiver are content enough. But Fiver has the gift of prophecy. When he warns that the Warren has to be abandoned right away or that they're all going to die, Hazel and a small circle of friends and him leave, despite the fact that they have no idea where they're going. Fiver envisions a great high place where they can all be happy and safe. But there are a series of imposing obstacles to overcome, not only from humans and predators, but from other wild rabbits as well. Consequently, the basic story of Watership Down is the ancient quest for home, although in this case, it is a new home that represents a wild rabbit's idea of utopia. The third book is The Third Policeman. A comic trip through hell in Ireland as told by a murderer, The Third Policeman is another inspired bit of confusing and comic lunacy from the warped imagination and lovely demented pen of Flann O'Brien, author of At Swim Two Birds. There's even a small chance you'll figure out what's going on if you read the publisher's note that appears on the last page. This text refers to the paperback. Book description. Fiction. The last of O'Brien's novels to be published, and now reissued by the Dockley Archive, The Third Policeman is Flann O'Brien's brilliant comic novel about the nature of time, death, and existence. Told by a narrator who has committed a botched robbery and a brutal murder, the novel follows him and his adventures around a two-dimensional police station where he's introduced to atomic theory and its relation to bicycles, the existence of eternity, which turns out to be just down the road, and the view that Earth is not round but sausage-shaped. Our Mutual Friend, the fourth book. Charles Dickens' 1865 novel, his last completed novel, Our Mutual Friend, is an extraordinarily dark and convoluted work, featuring such unforgettable characters as Mr. Boffin, Mr. Podsnap, Bradley Headstone, Jenny Wren, Silas Wegg. Dickens continues, or rather concludes his artistic legacy, with a work rich in well-written and compelling characters. Exploring, as do many of Dickens' works, the intricacies of inheritance, Our Mutual Friend is also deeply concerned with families and the things that hold them together or rip them apart. Interesting and fraught, emphasizes on education, upholding the particularly English interests of the faith still rising the British Empire, and concerns about the absolute uncertainties about life and death, this is quite a way to come at a last complete novel. Our Mutual Friend begins with Lizzie and her father, Gaffer Hexam, patrolling the river at the dark of night. Pulling a body out of the river for its potential reward money, the novel jumps right into the action with a bang. The body is presumed to be that of a young John Harmon, just returned from South Africa to claim a huge inheritance from his recently deceased, hateful, and miserly father. The only heir dead, the elder Harvin's loyal employees, Mr. and Mrs. Boffin, stand in next in will and will inherit everything. And this causes a stir in society, where Mortimer Lightwood, the legal executor of the will, and his friend Eugene Wayburn are called in to view the body and question Gaffer Hexam. This causes two others to be drawn to the plot. Lizzie Hexam, an uneducated but prescient young woman, who immediately catches Wyvern's eye, and Miss Bella Wifford, a sprightly young woman whose marriage to young John Harmon was the sole condition for that gentleman to come into inheritance provided by his untimely death. The novel tries over the next 700 pages to work out the personal ramifications of the murder, the will, and the fates of the two young women. So many of Dickens' novels deal with the lives and educations, scholastically, socially, or both, of young people, and Our Mutual Friend is no different. Gaffer Hexman, the boatman, is opposed to book learning and refused to allow either Lizzie or his younger son Charlie to even learn to read. Lizzie arranges, though, for Charlie to remove himself from the cycle of Riverside drudgery by facilitating his escape to a school, where he excels under the tutelage of one of Dickens' most intense characters, Bradley Headstone. Elsewhere, the Boffins, now in a state of financial ease, seek to improve their cultural understandings, hiring a literary man with a wooden leg, the well-versed Silas Wegg, and even buy the mansion that Wegg works in front of. Other characters, like the mercenary Bella Wiffer, and the absolutely indolent Rayburn, the articulator of bones, Mr. Venus, all seem to be in the sore need of social and moral educations. Just to kind of continue this theme, one may be particularly interested in the kinds of literary funds that Dickens draws on in Our Mutual Friend. His depth to 18th century literature is heavy indeed, with the works of the poet James Thomson and the historian Edward Gibbon coursing through the novel like the very Thames itself, that's the river in England, laying the groundwork for literary and historical commentary on the nature of the empire, and particularly British imperial interests, and how those interests reach from the international into the lives of individuals. Another important predecessor in this line is the infamous Mr. Podsnap, a very dark descendant of Lawrence Stein's Corporal Trim from Tristram Shandy. Trim's famous flourish in Podsnap's hand acquires the ability to annihilate entire nations. Dickens also reveals heavy debts to fairy tales and nursery rhymes that continue and complicate the emphasis on children's educations, how they are managed, and the impact that they have on the world as it will become. If you aren't interested in reading Our Mutual Friend yet, you should be. Clearly my interest lay in the national and educational strains of the novel, but there's obviously so much more. Now, my knowledge of Dickens may be limited to the 5 or 6 novels I've read so far, but you will be hard-pressed anywhere in Dickens, or anywhere else for that matter, to find a more frenetic villain than Mr. Bradley Headstone. To see him in action alone makes this novel worth reading. It ranks right up there with David Copperfield's Urra Heep in terms of Dickens' most intense, insistently horrifying creations. The final book is The Flash and Green Lantern, Faster Friends 1 and 2. In early 1940, an extraterrestrial Starcraft crash-landed on the countryside north of Gotham City. The craft's pilot, later to be dubbed Alien X, made his way to Gotham City, where his mere appearance terrified Gotham citizens. The U.S. military assigned a young author, Gunther, to contain the public's knowledge of the extraterrestrial's landing. Gunther brought in the Golden Age Green Lantern and the Flash to assist what was called a threat to national security. The young patriotic heroes attacked Alien X, and it responded with force. Working individually, the heroes cannot overcome the extraterrestrial. Only together could they marshal their forces and subdue Alien X. Rather than fight further, Alien X surrendered, and against the heroes' wishes, was taken into government custody. Had Alien X been able to communicate with the heroes, they would have seen it meant no harm to Earth. Realized they had been used and cast aside by the army officer, Green Lantern and the Flash hid the alien starship, so not fall into government hands. Alien X's species were extremely long-lived, with lifespans that span thousands of years. In that perspective, it saw its incarceration as a minor inconvenience. Unknown to the heroes, Alien X was subjected to decades of experiments. Eventually, Alien X was infected with a terminal cancerous disease. Learning it would soon die, Alien X easily broke free of its imprisonment in the late 1990s. seeking revenge against those that contributed to its death sentence, AlienX killed Gunther, now a general in charge of the government project, and then went after Alan, Green Lantern, Scott, and Jay, Flash, Garrick. The heroes were caught by surprise, and Garrick had mere moments to leave a clue to his disappearance. Fortunately for the heroes, their wives realized AlienX had been involved. Molly called Kyle Rayner, while Joan Garrick called Wally West for help. Now under AlienX's mental control, the Golden Age heroes unearthed its starship, which was buried in the Arctic. When the younger heroes arrived, AlienX ordered the Golden Age Flash and Green Lantern to fight their younger counterparts. Wally West and Kyle Rayner were able to free their elder namesakes together. They defeated AlienX. While West and took Garrick and Scott to safety, Rayner tried to help the dying X. Surprised by the sign of compassion, AlienX knew it was too little too late for him and the planet Earth. Rather than face imprisonment once more, AlienX killed himself. The second part of the comic. After a quick recap of the last issue, we find that Jay Garrick is dying. His hypermetabolism is actually causing a disease that has been slowly killing him, leading up till now. He's about 24 hours to live. That doesn't stop him from finishing his duty, which is at this point to stop an alien invasion. The message that Alien X, the name of the alien from the previous issue, was sent an invitation to a parasitic race that apparently sweeps across worlds, leaving nothing in their wake. Portals have been opened across the world, and these aliens have been pouring out. Jay and Wally go back to the remains of Alien X's ship, only to meet with Alan and Kyle. The younger pair of the quartet decide to go back through one of the portals and fight the aliens on their home turf. When they arrive, something weird happens, and they each end up in each other's costumes, thinking they're each other. The scenes are very amusing, Kyle thinking he's Wally and making fun of the Green Lantern and vice versa. Eventually, with the help of Jay and Alan, the boys realize who they are and start kicking butt. They come across another mother alien and manage to drive it off, convincing that its actions are wrong. The alien also gives them transportation off the planet in the form of four portals. They figure out that what happened earlier with the mistaken identities, because Kyle and Wally went through the same portal, thus the alien offered four portals, one for each of them. Alan suggests that if he and Jay enter one portal at the same time, some of his healthy cells will transfer over to Jay's. Jay suggests that this could work the other way around and won't let Alan risk it. Alan goes ahead and risks it, and surprise, surprise, it works. Jay is cured, and there are no ill effects to Alan. Both Jay and Alan tell the boys that they hated each other when they started out but became best friends, and if Kyle and Wally can overcome the friction that their relationship seems to be based on, they might just be the best team ever! That's saying a lot considering the legacy, the first Alan and Jay, then Barry and Hal. Those are some tough acts to beat. Their issues take place around the time of Green Lantern 83. Okay, I'm back now. Does any of these books sound familiar in any way to the premise of the show? You have to look at what is the same in each book. The writers chose the books for a purpose of the story. In some ways, they show us what's going on. For instance, the Green Lantern Flash Faster Friends 1 and 2 talk about an alien from another world who crash-landed back in the 40s during the Golden Era character's time, and now the new versions of their old selves do not get along together, have to come together to stop a common enemy. Also, we see a polar bear in this book, followed by the appearance of another on the island. I also look at this island in regards to Green Lantern. He has to power up his ring to keep his powers. I see the island like his lantern. It's a power battery for the Lost Ways. I wouldn't be surprised if Locke couldn't walk if and when they got off the island. I now attribute this ability to the nanites, which are small robots, which the black smoke is presumably made out of, because they can enter his body and restore that ability, or just as easily take it away. I also believe this has a lot to do with other parties, so time will tell. Well, tell what's going on. With the other books like A Wrinkle in Time, we see facets of fantasy and science fiction coming into the story. A Wrinkle in Time is about children of a professor chasing their father through time and space to find him. There are many more books to this puzzle, and I'm sure more to come. So this is the start of this. I encourage everyone to look into the books here and start piecing the puzzle together. Anyway, I'll be back with more another time. That's it for this edition of the Your Theories About Lost podcast, Mega Theory Contest Edition. I'll be coming with you for the normal podcast next week. Thank you very much, and namaste.
Militant Hippie Theory by C6H12O6. The following is my attempt to establish a back history for the show that reconciles what seems to be inconsistent revelations in the first two seasons of Lost. I do have theories that address the characters and events of the show, such as who the others are, but felt it necessary to lay out all this as a foundation. I recognize the time constraints of readers and podcasters, and figured this would give people a lot to chew on initially. The Dharma Initiative was created to promote utopian scientific developments. When they were unable to find funding elsewhere, the DeGroots turned to Alvar Hanso, a weapons dealer, as a last resort. Hanso's ancestor, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, Magnus, had discovered the island and the slave trade expedition and recognized its unique traits, much of which was outlined by native folklore. Alvar Hanso suggests the island has a secure, secluded base of operations for the Dharma Initiative, hoping that he will also be able to push study of the island itself. Dharma begins their studies in a broad range of disciplines. With a steady provision of resources, and without outside interference, they make many breakthroughs in a wide range of fields. As Hanso had suggested, perhaps even demanded as a condition of his grants, one branch of Dharma is indeed studying the island. The study of the island yields the discovery of its unique electromagnetic properties. The DeGroots and their comrades are especially excited about the discovery of the healing properties of the electromagnetic anomaly. Hanso has been following Dharma's progress closely, and at this stage, whether on Alvar's own initiative or due to a coup within the Hanso Foundation seeks to take control of Dharma's experiments. Through slow infiltration and influence, the Hanso Foundation converts the electromagnetic experiments into development of a large-scale weapon, more potent than nuclear fusion. The DeGroots and their fellow scientists have become too invested in their discoveries, and firmly believe that they are making progress towards their utopian future. Upon discovering the Hanso Foundation's plot to develop the electromagnetic weapon, the DeGroots adamantly protest. When it becomes clear that the Hanso Foundation will not back down, and may even shut down the Dharma Initiative, the DeGroots decide, with heavy hearts, to make an armed stand against the Hanso Foundation. The Hanso Foundation, believing that they are dealing with simple idealistic scientists, send a small armed task force to the island to shut down the Dharma Initiative. The task force quickly finds themselves engaged with a fierce resistance. The scientists fight passionately, and even though they take on a lot of casualties and are severely thinned in numbers, they prevail. Dharma refers to this incursion as the Incident. In order to prevent another invasion from Hanso or any other hostile group that might prevent them from carrying on their studies to better society, the Dharma scientists complete work on the electromagnetic weapon, which ultimately is far stronger than the Hanso Foundation even imagined. Once activated, electromagnetic weapon is powerful enough to destroy the entire Earth at once. Dharma announces to Hanso and to other global corporations and governments that know of its existence, that it has the electromagnetic weapon, and that any attempt to interfere with their experiments or invade the island will result in the destruction of the Earth. In order to implement the doomsday aspect of the electromagnetic weapon, Dharma installs the dead man switch in the Swan Station. Unless one of the two-man teams enters the numbers every 108 minutes, the electromagnetic weapon will activate, build a charge, and discharge a force powerful enough to destroy the entire Earth. A hidden failsafe device, designed to disable the electromagnetic weapon permanently, is installed in case the dead man switch malfunctions, or there are other unforeseen complications. The doomsday device ploy has been successful. Hanso backs off from trying to shut down Dharma. Hanso continues to fund Dharma, and keeps up fresh supply shipments. So, at the very least, the Swan Station's occupants will be able to stave off the electromagnetic weapon's activation. The DeGroots, ravaged by the attacks, and wrestling with their own consciences about developing a doomsday device, became increasingly paranoid, to a point of delusion. They expend increasing energy towards reinforcing the island's security measures, using arcane knowledge and technologies developed in their experiments, some of which may be considered mystical or mainstream scientific standards. For instance, the entire island is hidden from detection and made nearly inaccessible by cloaking it in a dimensional shift, a slight misalignment from the dimensional space that the rest of the world exists within. The area surrounding the aggressive swan hatch and the dead man switch by proxy is guarded by the Black Smoke Sentry. The DeGroots, in their paranoia, may have even gone so far as to release an aggressive virus for which only they have the antidote, as a grim deterrent from intruders. Unable to cohabitate comfortably with the security measures in place, the DeGroots and the rest of the Dharma Initiative, except for the two-man Swan Station team, abandon the island. They re-establish their experiments in seclusion on another nearby island. There, they have continued to make astonishing advancements in technology and human knowledge. They continue to build their utopian society, even though they are always aware that their autonomy and sovereignty are fragile and guarded by a device that could destroy everything. Some things to be addressed in the next installment, though some items may be obvious in light of this back history. 1. Crash of Oceanic Flight 815. 2. The Others. Reasons for disguise, kidnapping of good people, reasons for killing. 3. Number Station. 4. Fenrir.